Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-99.3 WBT. Welcome to the show. In case you don't know, this is a weekly program that tries to intersect faith and values with different people, issues in our culture, locally, around the world. It's always a pleasure doing the show. Now, 20 years in the running, it's just been a great ride. And many thanks to my friends at Perry's Fine Jewelry and Ruth Chris Steakhouse for their sponsorship of the show. Without you, this program wouldn't be possible. Today is one show that I've looked forward to for literally months, as I've known it's been on the books. So to introduce the program, dear friends, listen to this. And if you don't know, that's the introductory music to John Hancock's show, Monday through Friday. And John is my special guest today. Dear friend, great to have you on the program.
So you finally got to the bottom of the list, huh?
Well, I had to have a show, and I thought, who can I get on? And my producer and your friend Ed Billick said, how about John Hancock?
Well, we have talked about this for a long, long time, and life just kind of kept on getting in the way. And so I'm honored to be here, because I know some of the guests you've had before me, I'm happy to be sitting in the chair.
Well, I'm glad you're in the chair, because I really want people to get to know John Hancock, maybe from a faith and values perspective, which I know you air on your show as a part of your commentary, but I think for people to really get into your heart, to know that part of your life would be really meaningful today. And I'm 20 years. You're how many here?
29 here.
Gosh, what does it feel like to be in the WBT Hall of Fame? Wow.
Well, that's a little humbling to walk past a plaque in the business offices every day. It's probably my greatest accomplishment, and I'm getting ready to retire in about a week.
Oh, my.
And I'll leave that plaque behind, but I never in my wildest dreams, A, thought I'd get something like a bronze plaque to commemorate my time at a radio station I've spent time at, and B, think I'd ever retire. Because radio announcers just don't generally ever get the opportunity to retire. They get re-fired, but they don't get retired.
Yeah, well, here you are with all of these years here at this station. And just the obvious question now is what does it feel like to realize that the end of 29 years is soon upon you?
Well, I think that's going to come in two chapters. I think it's going to be, I told somebody the other day, I fully expect to cry in the last 10, 15 minutes of the show. But I think that's going to be more out of relief than it is anything else. Then I think when I get a little farther down the road, I'll have a chance to reflect, and I won't look back with any regrets, per se. But to have accomplished to, it's weird to walk away from something that you've built all your life. There was a good long time in the 70s where I couldn't get anybody to hire me. And there's been some pretty good fights along the way to try to hold on to what I had accomplished thus far. And so now to voluntarily be walking away from it is rewarding, and I do look forward to the alarm clock going off and sending my wife off to work for a couple, and thinking to myself, you know, what do you have to do today? And the answer being, oh, that's right, nothing.
Anything you want to do.
But, you know, I also know that I think 30, 60 days down the road I'll get bored with that. So we're planning on doing some other things as well.
Yeah, any more radio possibilities? Do you
oh,
think?
Yeah.
No,
I'll still be around.
Thing?
You'll still hear me do a commercial or two. And WBT has left the door open for me, so there could be a commentary or a something in there. We haven't defined it yet. I don't want to define it yet. I'll just wait and see how much it is that I want to do. But, no, I'll still be around in some way or shape, form, or another.
Well, I know this is a meaningful statement from my heart to yours, and I know Ed Billick, my producer, and many thousands of others out there feel the same way. John, you really are Charlotte's most beloved. There are people who just love you deeply and count on your voice being a voice of reason that they can understand and listen to.
Well, it's been a two-way love affair, and I've told several people that have come into town over the years, show Charlotte you care, and they'll care back. This is a great community. There's a lot of really loving, caring people here.
Mm-hmm. And you've blessed them wonderfully and magnificently, not just between that 3 to 6 hour in the afternoon here now, but you did some other gigs too along the way here at WBT.
Well, yeah, I started off 9 to noon and did afternoons, did nights for a good many years. I call that my timeout period when I was being punished for speaking my mind and quitting in 1999, only to come back in 2001. But you know, if I hadn't taken the path that I had taken, I probably wouldn't be where I arrived. I really believe that getting a chance to retire and walk away after 29 years, if I hadn't done nights for that long, if I'd have been 9 to noon, for instance, my career would have probably been over a long, long time ago. So it is what it is.
In case you don't know, that voice is John Hancock, Charlotte's most beloved, 3 to 6 in the afternoon, soon to be retired, but always refiring. And John, when we come back, what I want to do is to ask you some faith and values questions, your background, and we share something together. We're both PKs.
Yeah.
We both had dads who were ministers, and you know, that influences you in ways you just can't even begin to explain to people. I think it's a very enclosed fraternity for those of us who are in that club, and I want to talk to you about that.
Great. I look forward to it.
I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. We'll be right back with my friend, John Hancock. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Welcome back to the show. Well, today's program is a very special one for me with my friend, but WBT radio personality, John Hancock, 3 to 6 every day, Monday through Friday, soon to retire and to move on to another phase of life for him. And John, since this is a faith and values program, my bet is a lot of people would love to know the influence of faith and values on your life. We might want to start with what I teased with before the end of the last segment. We're both in a very small fraternity. We're both PKs, preachers' kids, and that can be a blessing or a curse in a lot of ways. Tell us about your background, more specifically your home life, being raised as a PK.
Well, my dad was not ordained an Episcopal priest until I was 26.
Oh, wow.
And so he was a finance guy. He owned used car lots. He did all sorts of things. He was a true Renaissance man. He was a drummer. He was an oil painter. He was worked his way up to become vice president of American National Bank in Denver. He at one point of his life, we moved to St. Louis. I never quite knew why, and he traveled a lot. And finally, years later, we sat down and had a conversation. We went to St. Louis because my dad became a lobbyist for a major finance company. A gun-toting, briefcase-toting, handing off money to politicians to change votes lobbyist. And Dad, I think, had his eyes on the ministry, probably Methodist at that time, early in his life, and then got married and had two quick kids and went off to war and then came back and then met my mom and had me eventually. But his aspirations to ever follow his theological leanings kind of ended with the divorce, especially if he was going to do it in the Episcopal Church. So then he lost complete track of himself, and that's why that's why he became a lobbyist. All of a sudden, then he wanted the car, he wanted the house, he wanted the country club, he wanted the prestige, he wanted the state status and the standing, And that lasted about 2.5 or 3 years. And at that point, he, I think, then said, what am I doing? And we moved back to Colorado, and he took some land that we had in Estes Park, Colorado, had 10 acres of land up there, and he developed that into condominiums. And so that's essentially where I grew up. And then at some point, he went back to the University of Colorado and took some classes. And that was about the time I was graduating from high school. And then he went out to El Cerrito, California, to seminary and spent a year and a half, 2 years out there. And then he came back to be ordained at some point under the old, what they kind of called loosely, the old man mission of the Episcopal Church. And the rules had lightened up enough to the point that it was a possibility for him. But boy, it took him forever to get somebody to deaconize him. And that was a struggle because he just couldn't get past. He was good friends with the bishop and so on and so forth. He just couldn't get to that point. And then finally they deaconed him. And then after that, they ordained him. So I was about 26 when he turned his collar backwards and then took his first church in Irving, Texas. Dallas, essentially.
Now, did you go with your family
to
Dallas?
No, I was gone by then, okay. Although I got myself into tax trouble, and so I moved down to Texas and lived with them about the time that was happening. And so I remember him telling me that if you're going to come live in my house, you're going to have to get up and go to church on Sundays, because I can't have people living in my house when I'm trying to tell a congregation you got to show up and have you sleeping in on Sunday. So you can move back, and you know I'll do anything I can for you, but there's going to be some rules, and one of those is you're going to have to be in church on Sunday mornings.
Interesting. Now, before then, were you a part of a church congregation? Was faith and values an important part of your family's life?
It was a big, important part of my life until probably I graduated from high school, and then I went off to do my own thing and get myself into trouble and do this, that, and the other, and live a 70s and 80s lifestyle, which probably wasn't real in keeping with the Episcopalian values.
Well, but like most teens during that day,
yeah,
that's what
no,
they
I,
did.
I think to some extent by living that lifestyle, it helped send me back to where my foundation was. Mm. So I hadn't really maintained a religious thing. It was interesting because going back to it, being forced at 20-some-odd years old to go back to church every Sunday did make me appreciate what you get out of it. Mm.
So you did do what your father asked you to do.
Oh, yeah.
You were
every
week. And,
yeah, well, I was living in his house.
Involved
so,
in the church,
I could
yeah.
do that. And it was his first church, so it was pretty interesting to watch him venturing out and become an Episcopal priest and work with the congregation. And it was a great little church in St. Irving, just the greatest people, loving people, and they all adopted us like nobody's business. Although my dad was a pretty hardcore conservative Episcopalian priest. He fought with the Episcopalian church long before people were fighting with the Episcopalian church on direction. Fought with the bishops, he thought that they should stay true to their foundation. And this idea of adhering to society and not holding your ground on some things, whether popular or not, galled him to death all the way up till the day he died.
Really? He fought against a kind of progressive Christianity that started taking liberties with the scriptures and doctrinal standards.
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting.
So I've told you a story before about Mom and I went one Christmas Eve and sat there in the front pew, and Dad started preaching his sermon, and the sermon essentially was chewing out everybody in church that was there for their one time a year. And Mom and I kept on looking at each other like, you know, I'll go out that side door and you go out that side door. But it was tough love. Mm. And there were people in the church in that particular congregation that came up to him afterwards and said, thank you for that. Mm. I needed somebody to ride me on that. And then there were others that said, I'll never go back to that church again.
You know, my dad used to say all the time, the purpose of preaching is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And I think he did both of those. And it's easy to do one when people are hurting. It's harder to do the other when you're challenging people to change their wrong behavior.
I think talk shows can be the same way. Sometimes you say things for effect to see what the reaction's going to be. But sometimes, I remember confirmation class, they told us how hard it might be. It's hard to be a Christian, is what Father Moncrief said. And I thought to myself, well, that hard to be a Christian. What are you talking about? We had never been chastised for being Christians. Nobody had ever stopped our car on the way to church on Sunday or anything along those lines. I had no idea what he meant. I think I didn't really discover what he meant until I got a talk show and all tough issues started to come up, and you either had to stand true to your Christian faith or you had to kowtow to what society wanted you to believe. It was the same battle my dad had fought.
Interesting.
And so in some ways, by watching him when I moved to Dallas, I kind of learned how to handle that battle on the radio, too. Mm.
Somebody once said it's either Christ or culture. It's either the world or the word. They stand in contradiction to one another, and you've got to make your decision where you stand. So as you watched your dad go through this and really develop his whole ministry, did that have an impact upon you in your faith and values journey?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think my dad was in some ways kind of a decline and fall guy, and he was it bothered him no end where society was going, and I remember thinking to myself, why do you care? Who if you're headed in the right direction, if you're on the same page with God and Jesus Christ, why do you care about the rest of society? But now I've got a radio talk show and I care, and I'm not quite sure why I care either, but I do. And he did, to the point that I think it cut years off of his life. I mean, I really think he cared that much. It really bothered him what society was doing. And he's been dead now for 26 years. If I were to sit down with him today and tell him where society has gone and how comfortable we are with things that he vehemently disagreed with, it would bother him no end. Mm. But I believe in that decline and fall thing. I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime or maybe not even my granddaughter's lifetime, but I do think we're on the downhill swing. I do think that I've said this before, if you raise a generation on sex, drugs, and rock and roll, it's hard to get them to go back to faith, hope, and charity.
Hmm. Wow. You know, it's interesting. My dad used to say all the time that of the 21 great civilizations that have ever existed, 19 of them were all destroyed from within. And he said there was a cycle that happened in every single one. First, it abhorred sin. Then, secondly, it would endure sin. And then, finally, it would embrace sin. And he challenged me to do a historical study of all those great civilizations. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And I'm with you. I think we've gotten to the point now where we are not only just enduring sin, we're embracing it. We're calling what's good evil, and now what's evil good. And to me, that is the downward slope of every great civilization.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure it's not inevitable. I think that's the frailty of man to some extent. If you won the lottery and were born in the United States at any time, this has always been a country that allowed you freedoms that others didn't allow, and wealth and opportunity and all of that. And if you take full advantage of that, like I did in the 70s, go for the stuff that really is more vice than valuable, then if a society decides they're comfortable with that, if they decide they don't want to get up on Sunday morning and put on gray slacks and go to church, I think you're in trouble, and I think that's where we are.
Yeah, and we've passed on to future generations that freedom basically means license. You can choose whatever you want to do and oftentimes not even think about the results of what that will do to you and to generations to come.
Well, and as has always been the case, people are pretty comfortable with saying, oh, yeah, I'm a Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that old phrase my dad used to say as well, just because you live in a garage doesn't make you an automobile.
Yeah, that's true.
Just because you go to church, that doesn't make you a Christian any more than a man in the moon. It's something that happens in the heart. And when we come back, John, in the next segment, that's what I want to explore with you, is how has faith gotten into your heart and how has that been manifested in your radio show when you have callers call in from all different perspectives and you have been pretty steadfast in stating your views. John Hancock's my guest. We're talking about his faith and values. And this is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. We'll be right back.
Y'all ready?
Yeah, we're ready. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Welcome back to the show. With my friend John Hancock, reminiscing with him about his faith and values, the input of that into his life as he is now soon facing retirement. And by the way, if you'd like to hear this show in its entirety, go to WBT.com, scroll down to the weekend shows, look for the David Chadwick Show, and you can hear the podcast from beginning to end. What a fascinating insight it is into John Hancock's faith and values. Well, John, you talked in the previous segment about your dad being an Episcopalian priest and his views being fairly conservative, a concern for culture and its demise. If he lived today, you know, 25, 6 years after his death, he would be very concerned with where culture is going, as are you as well. Talk about how you integrated faith and values into your show and how you tried to let that inform you as you received calls from people from all over everywhere.
Well, it's my foundation. I mean, my folks put a pretty strong Christian foundation in there. I'm not so sure I'm not, to some extent, hypocritical. I think we probably all are in certain ways. Talk shows are one thing, and then standing up for your faith and values is another. And I may not have always done that in the ways that I probably should have done that. I think a lot of people fight with that, though, today. I guess I would almost ask you. I run into people all the time that essentially are born again. Tell me they're born again. And it's like they just got a free ticket to heaven. And I still kind of believe that you have to earn it. And but people look at me and say, oh, no, John, if you believe in Jesus Christ, you're in. Well, saying it and acting it every day, to me, are two different things. I don't think there is such a thing as a free ticket. I do think there's a responsibility to somehow or another leave a Christian life as opposed to just say, yeah, I believe in Jesus Christ. Maybe that's tough for some people. It's not tough for me. But saying it and then actually going into society and trying to not only stand up for your faith, but do Christian things for other people. One of the reasons this will sound bizarre, and I've told this to several people, and they always look at me like a, you know, a dog when he turns his head sideways. And but one of the things, when Billy Graham died, and I was not a huge Billy Graham follower, but you can't move to Charlotte, North Carolina and not be influenced by Billy Graham. And when Billy Graham died, we went through that whole week, and it just made me want to be a better man. But one of the things about all the stuff I've ever done in Charlotte to help other people is you get credit for everything. And I kind of want to go out and do some stealth philanthropy. Mm. I want to go out and do stuff without getting credit for it, without having everybody in town know what I did.
Like Jesus said, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. You know, don't be like the Pharisees who blow a trumpet and draw attention to themselves when they do great works. Do it behind the scenes so that your Father in heaven sees it and your reward in heaven is great.
It's still selfish. Anybody that's ever done for somebody else or volunteered, you always get tenfold back from what you put in. So it's still human selfishness. You're still doing it because it makes you feel good, maybe feels better about yourself. In some cases, I'm still working on my final exam. I want to make sure I pass that one.
Yeah. Well, you asked me, and I'll go ahead and answer real quickly. I think forgiveness is by grace. We can't earn it. There's no way we can earn it. But you're making a great point. If the root is right in Jesus, then there's got to be the fruit of good works and a life change that will come thereafter. And Jesus himself said at the judgment, not all those who call me Lord, Lord are going to enter the kingdom of heaven. There are some faux followers of Christ out there who say they've got the grace bit, but their lives don't show it. If you've got grace in your heart, there's got to be the expression of that grace in giving to the community, to other people, or it's not really real. That's what I believe. If the root is there, there's got to be the fruit.
I worked for a guy in the 70s that owned a nightclub, and he was born again. And he would preach that to you. We would go out and eat dinner or eat breakfast at Denny's at 2 o'clock in the morning after the clubs closed. And he would have his Bible with him and talk about how he was born again and have you found God, John, and blah, blah, blah. And then he'd take one of the waitresses home.
Oh. I call that Mary. A faux follower of Jesus.
Yeah, no, he was just a hypocrite right there in front of your face. Mm-hmm. And he probably turned more people off on religion than he ever turned them on to.
Yeah, and that's why Jesus' greatest enemies were the Pharisees, whom he called hypocrites. And it comes from the Greek word hypokritos, which means mask, that during their plays they would put on one mask to be a happy person and put on another mask to be a sad person. It was one person playing two parts, and that's what a hypocrite is. And it has no place in the kingdom of God.
But being a follower doesn't, I want to make sure I phrase this correctly, but a lot of preachers on any given Sunday will go into depth about the gospel or whatever the case may be. And sometimes I think it makes religion so complex that people almost get lost in the minutiae of it all. And it's not, the God I know made this pretty darn simple. You don't have to have a master's in religion to get in. You just have to live the life. So sometimes I think that we go so deep and try to explain things to such a degree that we almost make it too complex for people to follow.
Yeah, there was a great theologian of the 20th century named Karl Barth. He's called an neo-Orthodox theologian, and many people like him. Some people don't like him. But at the end of his life, as he lived out his life, especially going to the prisons every single week and caring for prisoners, on his deathbed, he was asked by someone, how do you put the gospel into one sentence? Make it succinct so everybody can understand it. Now, here's a man who wrote volumes about Christian theology and ecclesiology and ethics and values and all that kind of thing. And here's what Bart said on his deathbed. He said, here is the Christian gospel in a nutshell. Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. I mean, that's
all you need to know.
It really is the truth. I'm loved deeply by God. The Bible tells me that. And if I'm loved by him, my call is to love other people.
Yeah. For God so loved the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there that may be a rainbow guy at a sporting event, but it also carries a lot of truth.
Yeah, it really does. And if you could just get that down, how our lives would change. I end every program with these words. Hey, the bottom line, all of the Bible in one sentence is love God and love your neighbor. If you do those two things, you have a lifetime's worth of work to do. I mean, it really is that simple. If you want to go love God, prove it by loving that which God loves most in the world, and that's your neighbor. They're created in the image of God. So when you go love them and care for them, you're loving God. And if everybody did that, John, what a nice world we'd have to live in.
Well, and your life runs smoother. I don't think there's any proof of that. But when you do good things for other people, or you don't do things you're not supposed to be doing, I think your life runs smoother. Yeah. My life has run fairly smooth. Doesn't mean I haven't had obstacles and tragedy and so on and so forth. But
in this world, you'll have tribulations, Jesus said. Nobody escapes them. They happen to us all.
Oh, but it makes you stronger.
It does.
I mean, when it's all said and done it's kind of like why this retirement thing I'm getting ready to go through right now. When I look back on it, no, I don't have any regrets. Now, when I really get down to the detail, I got all sorts of things that I wish had been different and regrets and so on and so forth. But as a whole, I wouldn't give up the path that I took to get here for all the money in the world. Not because it wasn't easy or was easy. It's because of what I learned out of all of it.
Yeah. You've talked about maybe doing stealth giving and caring and all of that stuff. Might you be involved in charity work after this is all done?
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely will, but you'll never know about it.
Well, let me push a little more. Do you have a specific charity that really touches your heart?
Well,
obviously something at Christmas time. I'm giving you a chance to plug
that. Yeah, I was going to say, Kids First. I'll always be involved with Kids First because we've impacted 35, 40,000 kids doing that, and so I'll always do that. I have an awful lot of people saying, you're coming back on March 16th to do your Father's Day, aren't you, John? That was the day my dad died, and we've done a thing on the radio called Father's Day every year where people call in and talk about their dads. I'm not coming in for that. But I'll be involved with Kids First. But there's other stuff out there. Big Brother's always been something that kind of appealed to me. But it doesn't necessarily have to be an organization. There's a homeless camp 150 yards from here. Mm. So maybe I'll go down there with them. I have Hancock coffee mugs. Maybe they can use one.
Oh, I like that. That sounds like a lot of fun. You really have a heart for kids, don't you? That seems to be at the foundation.
Kids and old people, elderly people. People that can't fend for themselves.
Mm. The underdog?
Well, yeah, I like the underdog, but I also expect you to solve some of your own problems. That's why I say kids and elderly, people that take advantage of elderly, that really raises the hackles in my that bothers me a lot.
Yeah, and in listening to you too, you don't have a whole lot of patience with the victim mentality either. It seems like you want people to take some responsibility for their lives.
No, I absolutely do. Mm. I absolutely do, and I think an awful lot of the problems we have today are from people that haven't taken responsibility for their actions. Kids out of wedlock and no direction after that, and our problems are solvable. It's just people getting their act together and going back to the foundation and the basics of where we were to start with.
Yeah, for me, it's the family too much, too. It's we are breaking apart the very fabric of our society that's made us strong. You know, your dad's influence on your life, my dad's influence on my life. And so many issues that I see in our culture are because of fatherlessness. And we don't have dads at home really caring for their kids, teaching them values, walking with them, being faithful and loyal. And that's what I want to see returned to as a part of our nation's history.
Absolutely. Even if it's just sitting at the dinner table every night, eating dinner together.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like it's all that important, but that was the foundation of an awful lot of us found our being in.
Yeah, that voice is John Hancock. I'm David Chadwick. We have only one more segment, but let's get into John. Now, where do we go from here? And we'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick. Welcome back to the show. And for those of you who are John Hancock fans, you recognize that piece is the way he closes his show with. John, what's the story behind that story?
When my dad died back in March of 1994, I had pretty much drugged my whole audience through. He'd been in a coma for 10 days. And so we went through all of that. And then we got to the day that he passed away. And I came in and did our first Father's Day and said, as you well know, I've been preoccupied with my dad, but why don't you call in and tell me about yours? And they did for 3 hours, and it was just the most honest radio I'd ever heard. So after that show was over, got on a plane, went back to Colorado, and buried my dad. But in that process of being in my dad's house and with my mom and so on and so forth, I went back to his room and his chest of drawers. And I was getting ready to get married. I was probably 4 months from being married. And I found his wedding ring. And Dad never wore his jewelry, but he just didn't like jewelry. Not for any reason, I don't think. And it was cool with my mom. Everything was. But anyway, I found his wedding ring. And so I decided right then and there that if she would let me have it, I wear it to this day. And then at one point, I went into his study. And I was sitting in his chair at his desk. And I looked over, and there was his CD player and his stereo. And I turned on his CD player and hit that tray open, and out pulled the tray, and there came this Buddy Rich CD. So my dad was a drummer and a swing jazz aficionado and so on and so forth. So I knew that was the last CD he had ever listened to. And I just kind of found a song. I don't know if that was his last song or not, but I do know that was his last album. And so I just kind of pulled that song out, and we've been stealthily closing the show with it since 1994. And it's just kind of my own little quiet salute to my dad about, you know, hey, I haven't forgotten you. I owe him. He never took the easy way out. I was a challenge. They sent me to private schools. They sent me to military school. They did everything they could to try to find a direction for me. And I think he knew that when he died that I had found, because I had just arrived here 2 years earlier or something. I don't think he ever thought I'd pull 29 years here, but I think he thought maybe all the hard work was worth it. But I can't even begin to tell you the hell I sent that man through. So that's just a nice little quiet salute to him that I can do on a daily basis without getting as deep as I just did.
Well, you hadn't had a chance yet, but your mom influence on your life?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so proud of her, I can't even see straight. She's a Stanley Marcus model, old Stanley Marcus model. So I've got pictures of Stanley Marcus holding me on his lap. I should have been nicer to him. But she was one of the Stanley Marcus girls out of Dallas, Texas. Beautiful woman. She's 93. She's still beautiful. And her faith, I've always said my dad was an Episcopal priest, but she's the religious one in the family. Her faith is pretty strong.
Well, you know, I have this feeling that all around us are a cloud of witnesses, like the Bible says. I just got a feeling your dad is listening to this show right now. And he's having a chance to hear you talk about your love for him. And, of course, your mom knows that because you still have the opportunity to tell her.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that the way it works? I don't know if
so,
that's how
John,
it works or not.
I really do believe that. I sometimes feel my mom and dad's presence around me. I know that I can't see them, but they're just there. They're just there.
Every time I lose a pet, I tell them, you go find Dad. And, you know, I kind of went through that, our pets. What's the theological vision of pets? And my dad would have told you pets don't go to heaven. But I figured if it's heaven, they got to be there. If it's that good a place, they got to be there.
Well,
so I always tell them, go find Dad. I assume Dad is so busy with my 15 pets I've sent him, he may not have time to listen to this show. I picture him on the other side of those gates saying, it's good to see you now. Take these damn dogs and leave me alone.
He's eavesdropping. And he even heard what you just said. He's going, now, John, you can talk a little better than that now. Come on, fella. What are you going to miss most in leaving this radio gig?
Probably the platform I have. Well, you know, when I quit here in 1999, had management troubles and left for a couple of years. 3 days after I quit and left, Columbine happened in my home state. And I didn't have that platform to tell people what I thought. So there I was sitting at home with nobody to talk to. I can talk to my wife, but she's not going to listen to me. So I think just having the platform to do it every day, I'm sure I will miss that.
What will you miss least?
the corporate part of it, just the day-to-day corporate, however you want to classify that. I've never been, as you well know, I've never been very corporate. I don't dress the part. I need a haircut. I just have never been much of a corporate guy. And sometimes corporate decisions, I think, are wrong decisions. So I don't mean to be negative, and I understand you can't run without them either. But I won't miss the parent companies that we've had. Very much. I've run across some great people in those companies, but I won't miss the entities of ownership at all.
Well, believe it or not, we only have a couple minutes left in the show, and I want to give you a chance to take this microphone and speak to this community from your heart through the lenses of faith and values. What would you say?
Well, I would say thank you to start with. When I got here, it was not popular. It was perceived that I had replaced the very popular H.A. Thompson, and so it started off a little rough. But like I said earlier, as soon as they found out that I wanted to care about them, then they cared back. And Kids First is evidence of that, and our Father's Day program is evidence of that. But listen, when my dad died, and I still have him, this was before email and all that stuff, I bet you I have 300 cards and letters in a stack at home. Of people that took the time to write me and tell me that they were sorry to hear about my dad. So I just appreciate the people of Charlotte no end. And it is a city of churches, and that says a lot about them.
John, a lot of people don't know your real name's David Hancock.
Yeah.
And, of course, my name's David as well. And my mom and dad named me that, hoping that's who I would become. The name David in the Hebrew means beloved. And you are entitled Charlotte's most beloved as John David Hancock, and I think now I know why you're so beloved.
Well, you know, I gave that name to myself.
Well, we have our radio shtick, don't we? But you are truly a beloved figure in this community. You'll be missed on this radio station, but you've been planted in the hearts of so many thousands of people. I don't think you'll ever, ever be forgotten. And it's an honor to call you my friend.
Well, thank you much. It's been an honor to be on the show.
Well, I hope that the future holds great and bright things for you. Are you going to travel some at all?
We might. We're thinking bucket list trip. South Africa might be in the some place that I never thought I would be before. And I'm sure there's a few trips back to Colorado and back. That's still where I keep my soul. Mm-hmm. I still love those Rocky Mountains.
And where's your mom?
Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. So you'll be able to go see her, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
More readily, and that'll be a great thing in your life as well. Well, I just want to say for your 29 years here, you've touched so many. For the 20 years I've known you, it's been a pleasure. Keep your heart so beautifully woven toward those who are in need, and give yourself away, and you'll find that life. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think God wove it into the universe. It's called the law of reciprocity. What you give away, you'll get back, and I think it's a way he uses to motivate us in a way to give our lives away.
Amen.
John Hancock, thank you, my dear friend.
Thank you.
God bless you. And everyone, would you do this favor for me? Every week I end this show the same way. Please love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might. That's where it begins. And then love your neighbor as yourself. The people God loves most in the world are those with his image stamped on it. Your neighbor, go love them. And if you just do those two things, you have a lifetime's worth of work to do. I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Talk with you all next week.